Jesse Crow. What's up, my friend?
What's going on?
I'm just going to leave it at that Jesse Crow part. But so we, I think as of this morning, maybe we have a new president.
Yep.
A new, I guess it appears an old new president.
Yeah.
So for folks listening, don't think you're on coffee talk now and we're going to get into politics. That's not really our thing. I did tell Jesse I was going to mention just real quick starting in because we are not naive in the time in which we live that country is very divided, but thought this was pretty fitting yesterday from my devotion. In fact, I shared this with you and good friend Roger and Steven, a little group text that we have going on. And I loved it. It was Daniel 2, 20 through 23, and the version they used was the New Living Translation. And it says, I choose to rejoice in God's lordship over world events today, joining with the ancient praise of all God's people. In the words of Prophet Daniel, praise the name of God forever and ever, for he has all wisdom and power. He controls the course of world events. He removes kings and sets up other kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the scholars. He reveals deep and mysterious things and knows what lies hidden in darkness, though he is surrounded by light. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors, for you have given me wisdom and strength. So, you know, my thoughts on that is us as believers that definitely kingdom over country, you know, that we need to remember that no matter if you're listening to this. I mean, half our country's divided, so we might even have half, you know, the listeners divided, and that's okay. Just remembering that God is on the throne. I know that's the Christian Jesus Duke thing to say after the election, but honestly, I would feel that way no matter who was in office today. Right. So
I'll give you another one.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is one I always like. This is this message, Psalms 46:10.
Uncle Eugene.
Step out of the traffic. Take a long, loving look at me, your high God, above politics, above everything.
Yeah.
How about that?
And just to refresh, in case you didn't like the results, it didn't say step into traffic. It said step out of traffic, right? Like, don't. It's okay. Everybody's going
to
be fine.
Hey, you know what? There's a song, I'm not going to play the song, but there's a song I've been listening to, like on repeat, and it's called I Will Be Still by Young Oceans.
Okay.
Man, like.
I'm not going to lie, when you started, I don't know that group, when you started Young, I thought you was about to break out of like a rap name, like Young somebody, like just sounded like
Young MC or something like that.
Yeah. No.
I think that's from Young Oceans, very kind of off the grid. Worship style, I would say. Off the grid, is that the right word?
Yeah.
That's a good one. It's based on Psalms 46:10. I always read, there was a few years ago, there was an election, and I don't even want to say who it was, but I was frustrated by the results because I was, you know, at that time, I wasn't walking with God the way I do now.
Right.
You know, when you let current events eclipse your security in the Lord. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was one of those. And I just happened to read that message version. And I'd never heard that before. And it was right then that I read it. Just bizarre. Like, and it was, man, I could just feel God in it. Like, dude.
Yeah.
I'm still king.
That's right.
You know, I'm allowing this to happen. And you got to roll with it.
Yeah.
You know? And so that would be the thing. Anyone out there who's not happy today. You know, I was... This is not funny, but it kind of is.
What?
I
love that you start laughing and say, this is not funny.
I was at a place in Birmingham yesterday. I don't even know if I should say the name of the place.
Okay.
They were setting up for a victory party.
Yeah.
Let's just say they're very disappointed today.
So the victory didn't happen. Huh?
It's not funny.
It's always funny, a terrible, terrible thing. They pan the crowd to whoever, you know, candidate they're supporting. And
well, and at that point, I mean, you know, by later in the afternoon yesterday, I really dug a little bit. I kind of nerded out on some of the polling stuff. And there's a guy named Nate Silver, who is been historically very accurate on his research on polling. And he kind of said some things that led me to believe the outcome that actually happened. So I was sitting there, I was watching these people walking in with all their decorations and stuff, and they were all happy and everything. And I was just like, ooh,
yeah,
I'm going to get the hell out of here.
little tough there, but the whole polling thing, and we'll move on. But we were talking the other day, me and a couple guys, and was just like, I just don't know the scientific part of that works anymore, because I'm gonna be honest, if anybody calls me on my phone and starts asking me personal questions, or like walks up to me on the street, like, hey, can we ask you who you voted for? I'm like, no, you can't.
Right.
You know? And so I picture those folks that have, like, and I know some by name, that have hour long conversations with, scam callers, you know, just to talk with them. It's like, that's who they're getting the polling information from. So,
you know, I always picture when I think of a election poll.
Yeah.
I always picture the guy hitting the thing and it going up and hitting the bell.
Yeah.
I don't know why I always picture that.
Yeah. That's weird, but I like
it. It's like, and it goes up a little bit and comes down.
Yeah.
But you know, they say, one more thing about polling. I didn't know this, but it's so funny because they still use that method to find out who people are voting for. Mm-hmm. But now very few people, well, hardly anybody answers their phone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you got to have your number stored in my phone for me to answer.
Right.
It's like, so, if it's somebody I know, you'll leave me a voicemail, I'll get back with you.
It's like 1 in 1,000 people answers their phone.
Right.
So it's like, how is that accurate at all?
Yeah.
You know? Shoot me a text. Hey, who are you voting for? Well, I'm still not going to respond.
Last night, I think it was Iowa, that they said in the poll that Harris was going to win by a certain amount. And like, I don't even know. I went to bed earlier before it was called. But like Iowa, Trump was up by like 15% or something. They're like, yeah, kind of missed it on that
one. We missed the mark on that one.
But anyway, on to better stuff. So before we get into this, we've mentioned, what was the name of that band again? Young Oceans?
Young Oceans. I Will Be Still is the name of the song. Okay. It comes off an album. Some people are not going to like this album. It's kind of weird.
That's okay.
Josh Garrels makes an appearance on here.
I like Josh Garrels.
Subjects in Motion is the name of the album, and it's very good.
Well, not to necessarily promote them, I'm glad you like them, but the reason I bring up music, how about that group Jesse Crow and the Unrest?
Yeah.
A song called Buffalo.
Buffalo Live at 1971 Sounds. My friend Todd Lyons.
Yeah.
I have to remember his name.
Yeah. It's already starting.
Grammy award winning.
It's already starting. Jesse's getting so big. He's trying to remember the people.
I can't remember anything. Yeah. Todd Lyons, Grammy award winning producer. He recorded everything. My friend Andy Green mixed it.
Yeah.
My friend Chase Delbridge mastered it.
Yeah.
For all you music tech nerds, who knows what all that means. I still don't.
Joseph Kennard slapping the bass.
Joseph Kennard. Jared Held wrote the music, and
John McClendon on the drums.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It dropped.
Yeah,
I hate that when people say it.
Do y'all have a kick? Do y'all have a kick drum?
We do.
Come on the kick drum. There's your movie reference.
Come now on the kick drum.
Anybody out there know what movie that is? Let's don't say it.
If
you comment on it, we'll send you something. How about that?
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might be a cup of coffee or something, but
right.
This is a low budget, but we'll send you. So what movie was Come on the kick drum? Gary.
Go Now.
Yeah.
I love Gary just doesn't. It's not having it.
I prefer
Gary.
Just,
go I Now.
I prefer just to enjoy come. It over here. Anyway, good movie. But yeah, on all major platforms. So I know you guys, listeners here, got a sneak peek of that. But go and download that and spread the word, share it on social media. And I'm just going to go and predict this. I think Buffalo is going to be a big, big hit. Big
Man, I hope so.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yep, awesome stuff. Well, so we've got something we've talked about, honestly, ever since we've started the podcast, that this was going to be something down the road. Many people wonder, you know, the Saints and Pioneers name, which, by the way, I want to stop just 1 second. We even had somebody at church come up to us, Jeff, our brother Jeff, and ask, "Hey, man, when's a new podcast episode coming out?" It's been quite a busy season.
Yeah.
Can I even stop right there and say, from last time, I'm now a papa.
Yeah.
How about that? I just realized that we haven't
done one since that happened.
Yeah. Which is honestly why we haven't done one. I've been kind of busy. But granddaughter Ellie, and I'll just tell you how it's going. Somebody, this morning, actually, I talked with my dad, and he had a friend riding with him, and had it on speakerphone because, you know, my dad talks on speakerphone with the phone to his ear. We're at that stage. Won't get hearing aids, but, you know, anyway, I digress. But his buddy's in there, so heads up, if you know my dad and you call him, just be careful what you say because you're always on speakerphone. But the friend asked, "How's Ellie?" And the only response that any new papa could have us is, "She's perfect." Like, I don't know if that's what he was asking, but yeah. She's perfect, man.
It's one pretty baby.
Yep. I think I clock in most weeks about 185 to 190 pounds, and this little 7-pound girl just like owns me.
Yeah.
Like, no questions.
That's awesome.
Yeah. As she grows, it's going to be bad. I'm probably going to need a second job, stuff like that. But anyway, I digress. But we've talked on, Saints and Pioneers. Obviously the pioneering theme is a big deal to us. And, we've shared, you know, quite a bit about our church at Southside story, and this is not a church at Southside podcast, but that is very much a part of, you know, our life and our calling and what we do out there. And, for those that maybe if you're listening for the first time or haven't heard a lot about that, you know, the basics of it was a house church plant that grew to what we felt was needing a building, and then having this calling to really minister to our homeless community, or maybe those that are, you know, kind of down and out in our community, forgotten places. And through that, God just bringing what really is not a unique calling, but many feel as if it's unique, I guess, of, you know, a group of people that he called us to wouldn't come to us. And so he sent us to them, you know, very novel concept of going, that's in scripture. But within that time, we stumbled across, an author that we already knew and had read some of his stuff, Brennan Manning.
Yep.
Ragamuffin Gospel. And I'd encourage anybody, if you haven't read that, that's easily a top five book for me. Any particular things with Brennan Manning that, before we even tell where we're going with that jump out to you or that you like about him? Old ornery man.
He is kind of an old ornery man.
Was.
Yeah. He's passed away now, but, Brennan Manning, The Furious Longing of God was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Really good book. But anybody that wants to get into Brennan Manning, mm-hmm. he's got tons of sermons on YouTube.
Yeah.
If you're not a reader, that's how I got into him. Mm-hmm. I just started listening to his sermons and stuff. And he is an interesting dude, man. Mm-hmm. Like, he is a former priest.
Yeah.
That struggled with alcohol abuse pretty much his entire life.
I was going to say, I think even till the day he died, it was a struggle.
He is one of the most interesting characters. Like, he, I know, not long before he died, mm-hmm. I don't have much of the details on this, but I heard this, had read this on, but he did an interview and he lied in the interview. Mm. They asked him some stuff and he was dishonest.
Yeah.
And he called the guy back and said, "What I told you was not true, and I'm sorry."
Wow.
And that made me love him even more.
Mm-hmm.
He was so transparent about his struggle with sin,
mm-hmm.
But yet he was so in touch with the Spirit of God, like the true nature of God, the God as Father, the God of the prodigal story.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so passionate about people understanding that, you know, I think he said one time he said, when you stand before God in heaven, you know, we all, like, conservatives, you know, Southern Baptist people, you know, we've all heard, when you stand before God one day, you know, he's going to ask you why he should let you into heaven or something like that. And it's almost this very hard, like, judgmental kind of scene that's always been painted.
Like you better have the right answer.
Right.
Yeah.
Brennan always said this. He said, when you stand before God one day, he's going to look at you and he's going to say, did you know how much I loved you? Mm-hmm. And that just repainted that whole scene and the joy of redemption, the joy of God, of pursuing his people and stuff. And Brennan did a really, he was just of a loving, grace-filled God whose desire is to restore you, to love you, to bring you back to grace and stuff. Anyway, it's just a really good, I'd say, father of our faith in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you know? Sure. I was hoping you would share that quote. If not, I was going to share that. That's such a beautiful thing. And I must admit, I did grow up, and this was nothing wrong with the churches I was in. They all loving people that, you know, did their best to point us to a relationship with Christ. But I'm going to mention something from the 80s or 90s. I don't know that we've ever talked about it, but I bet you went to it. Did you ever go to a judgment house?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I got saved 7 times at judgment houses.
Oh, yeah.
Because I, you know, like, I don't know, had sex with my girlfriend and I show up to the thing and they're like, you stand in that moment before, you know, God, and he's like, you gonna get in? It's like, I don't think so. And then they send you to hell. It's like this hot room with like butane heaters.
They turn the heat up.
Yeah.
And you go in there and it's like, it's mildly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's not torment. It's just like, it's a little frustrating.
Yeah. It's like, we might want to cut the AC on is what I'm thinking. But no, I had some come to Jesus meetings. You know, none of them worked, by the way, because I feel like mine, at least, I'm not saying, there's somebody probably listening, it's like, man, I really was changed. And great. I'm glad for it. But,
you know, I got in.
Mine was fear. I got to get my stuff together.
So I have a quick judgment house story. I might have just gotten out of high school, but I was still living at home, and I think I was 17, 18 years old. I don't remember. But I remember I was young enough to be grounded because I'd done something, or I don't remember what I did. And my parents were like, you know, you have to be home by 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. My parents were terrible at grounding us because it would last for like a day, and then they just didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
But
over it.
I had already pushed the boundary on some things, just not coming home on time and, you know, not cleaning up after myself, whatever it was. And so I went through this judgment house. Well, I'd already went through it one time. Mm-hmm. And I had some friends that were like, hey, let's go through it. Go through it with us. And I'm thinking, it was like 8:15. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I got to be home at 9. I was only 10 minutes from my house. So I was like, oh, maybe I can make it. Well, we go through it. Well, we get to the end, and they bring you in this room where they're going to really give you an opportunity to seal the deal or whatever. Right. And so I was going to, there's a door, like an exterior, like an exit door before, like after you pass the room, you know, like if you just keep walking straight, you can go outside.
Right.
So I'm like, well, I'm just going to go on out and get in my car and go home. Well, this guy stops me and won't let me leave. Mm. Like, he forces me to go in there.
Man.
And I tried to tell him, I was like, no, I'm good, man. I've already done all that. I did that a long time ago. No, you have to go.
You're going to get saved. You got to go back. Yeah.
So I was like, I almost said, hey, if I just pray the thing now, can I go ahead and leave? Because I'm going to be in trouble.
Right.
Anyway.
Let me check off your salvation card here and I'll get out of here.
They were really.
Not today. Did you get in trouble? Did you make it home on time?
I don't think I got in trouble. I think I told my parents what happened, and they were, all right.
Yeah. So if you're young and out there listening and you need an alibi, I was at a judgment house. I don't know. You better check and see if those are still a thing. I don't know. Something. Youth group.
They may be.
Yeah. I don't know.
What a terrible thing. They're terrible. Stop doing
them. Don't say that. There were some that were good. anyway. But so back to Brennan Manning. And we'll share more on a book that we're going to get into, I guess a little series here, string together some episodes that go along with this. But we want to tell you how it came about first and actually play you a little clip from the Brendan Manning sermon that we heard about this. And it just hit at the right time where God was already stirring within us that calling of maybe leaving the traditional setting and doing something different. And I'll tell you how it came about, this particular thing. I was actually at work, had been going through some of these thoughts and feelings internally that I hadn't even expressed to other people. And I'm not typically a guy that watches a sermon on YouTube. Like, if I'm interested in a topic, maybe it's something I'm teaching on, you know, mm-hmm. coming up, I'll listen to somebody that I, you know, respect you know, care about, like, their viewpoint of things. I don't even know what I was searching for, but this message that we're going to play a clip from comes up, and I literally just could not take my eyes off of it. I mean, like, frantically writing notes, I was watching it on my computer, using my phone to record, like, video and probably send it to you at the time. I don't remember, you know, maybe. Other people, but it was like, it just spoke so much where we were at. And honestly, I feel like it speaks to where a lot of people are. They just maybe don't realize it mm-hmm. yet. And so, one, I would encourage you, the message itself is called Unsettling the Settlers. And it's by Brendan Manning. It's on YouTube. Very easy to find. We're only going to play a small clip of even what we had prepared to do, just for time's sake. And we want to talk about a book that he mentions. But encourage you, please go and listen to the whole thing. I promise you it'll be one of the best messages you hear. I think if any of this podcast ever resonates with you, I'm very sure that you'll enjoy this. But he's going to reference a book. We're going to play a little bit where he talks about it, and then we're going to just, each time we get together, maybe some breaks in, you know, different podcasts, but we're going to take a chapter of this book, and they're very, very small chapters. And this, I think, shares a lot with mine and Jesse's, mental ability here. It is a illustrated, cartoonish type book that was written, I think, in the 70s by a man named Wes Seeliger. He was a priest, and it's called Western Theology. And that's the illustration that Brendan Manning is going to used basically throughout this whole message. And I mean, he goes on for 15 minutes talking about the book itself. We won't listen to that much, but I do have it here. You got anything before we listen to this?
Roll it.
Jesus says, "If you make my word your home, you will indeed be my disciples. You will learn the truth, and the truth will set you free." In chapter 5 of Galatians, Paul writes, "When Christ freed us, he meant us to remain free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery." For the purposes of the talk this afternoon, we're going to presume that there are two kinds of people with two visions of life. The first kind are called settlers, and they see life as a possession to be carefully guarded. The second group are called pioneers, and they see life as a wild, fantastic, explosive gift. These two kinds of people with their two visions give rise to two kinds of theology: settler theology and pioneer theology. According to Wes Seeliger in his book, Western Theology, the first kind, settler theology, is an attempt to answer all the questions, to define and housebreak some sort of supreme being, and establish the status quo on golden tablets in CinemaScope. Pioneer theology is an attempt to talk about what it means to receive this strange gift of life and really live. The Wild West is the setting for both theologies. In settler theology, God, or rather the church, is the courthouse. It's the center of town life, and the old stone structure dominates the town square. Its windows are small, and that makes things kind of dark inside. Within the courthouse walls, records are kept, taxes collected, and trials held for bad guys. The courthouse runs the town. It's the settler's symbol for law, order, stability, and what the settler values, treasures, most of all, security. The mayor's office is on the top floor of the courthouse, the church, and his eagle eye ferrets out the smallest details of town life. In pioneer theology, the church is the covered wagon. It's a house on wheels, always on the move, no place is its home. The covered wagon is where the pioneers eat, sleep, fight, love, and die. It bears the marks of life and movement. It creaks, it's scarred with arrows, it's bandaged with baling wire. The covered wagon, the church, moves in on where the action is and doesn't bother to glorify its own ruts. The old wagon isn't comfortable, but the pioneers don't mind. They're more into adventure than into comfortability. The beautiful.
So you get the idea there. A lot of comparisons between, he uses the term settler theology and then pioneering theology. And each chapter is, like I said, very much mine and Jesse speed of a book. Each chapter is about a page to a page and a half. I guess comparing the two, so maybe three pages total in a chapter and pictures included, you got me, you know.
Yeah,
that was one of the things that brought me in. I've given this book to so many people.
I'm gonna color in mine.
Mostly church planners all across the country, man. I've sent it's a book that's out of print, but you can find them on eBay sometimes, other sites, and look for them in bookstores, all of that, that have used books. But Second and Charles, a good place in Birmingham area. I know there are other places in the country as well. But so we'll be going through chapters and stuff on that. But definitely encourage, go back and listen to that message. So as far as, you know, today, he really gets into this settler versus pioneer theology as far as what the church is. I think before we even get into like talking about things out of the chapter, I would love to ask you, Jesse, like how your view of what church is and how it's changed just even over the last, you know, say 10 years. What does that look like to you?
Well, I'm going to care why I say this. Like, I really think there are a lot of people that are really experiencing God, experiencing the life in Jesus. And I think they're finding that the institutional church, I think we can roll with that term, for the brick and mortar kind of deal. I don't like that term, but I think it's as good as we can get.
Yeah.
I think they find that more and more confining, the more they experience life in Jesus.
Yeah.
I say that, and I don't want to say, that's the way it was for me.
Right.
I mean, I look back over my life over the past 15 years and God just really, or 20 years, God really started put me in positions and places where the need for something more, like adventure, wildness, was satisfied, you know. And so, like, you know, I was at a I had the opportunity to help plant a church. I came along about a year into its existence, but with our friend Mike Skelton.
Yeah.
And that really came along at a time when I needed that wildness, that adventure needed,
it needed an outlet.
Yeah.
And that church really helped with that. And so that's when my view of church began to change.
Right.
And I will say, when I stepped into that place, mm-hmm. I couldn't go back to the other.
Yeah.
I just couldn't.
Right.
And I remember that church no longer exists through a lot of different circumstances. It closed its doors after 10, 11 years. And I was there for probably 9 of those years, I think. Mm-hmm. And as I led worship there. And I remember there was just a handful of us mm-hmm. That would meet after the church closed because we didn't know what to do at that point. Mm-hmm. And I just remember we would talk and we were like, what are we going to do now? Mm-hmm. Like, we can't go back to that institutional type of church.
Yeah.
And so I began to understand it was like, God began to just continue to reshape my idea of what mm-hmm. community, like we love that word in Christian mm-hmm. speak, you know, we talk about community and small groups and that sort of thing, but real raw community.
Yeah.
I had tasted that, you know, and I was like, I can't go back to the other, not to say that people that exist in, you know, that are in those institutional churches are not they're not fulfilling what mm-hmm. God's leading them to do. I'm not saying that, but I also think I've met a lot of people that are in that and they're pursuing God and it's starting to, it's almost like you want to tell them, but they don't really know it at that point, but they start to say, you can see in their spirit, it's like, it's not meeting that need for that wildness and that adventure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so my view of church is, has shifted now to, I believe it's more of a bare bones idea. Mm-hmm. We have to have community. We can't live life alone, mm-hmm. right? We have to worship God. We were not have to an obligation,
right?
We have to because we're going to die if we don't. Mm-hmm. We'll die spiritually if we don't. We right. are created to worship God, so we have to have community. We have to have worship, and we have to have an outlet to serve and to express. Mm-hmm. The gospel. We have to do that. And so it's just stripped down to bare bones. It's like, okay, am I doing those things? And it's not like a checklist to check off. It's like, the more I follow God, the closer I follow Jesus, the more I know I'm doing those things. Mm-hmm. You know, I mentioned to you a while back, we were talking about our history of our church mm-hmm. that ministers to homeless people. In my past, I had some folks that were really into homeless ministry, mm-hmm. but they were super legalistic about it.
Right.
And they used to say all the time, like, y'all need to be out there, you know, ministering to these homeless people. Y'all need to. And I would just walk away feeling guilty and everything. Mm-hmm. And now I find myself, we're 8 years
yeah.
into meeting outside with these homeless people. And it's not like it's just an automatic thing. Mm-hmm. It just came from an automatic flow of following Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just think it's kind of gotten back down to just this bare bone thing where it's like, I don't need the institutional church to do those things for me.
Right.
You know? And yeah. I'm always careful to talk about this because I don't want people to think that, well, I'm above that or right. I'm enlightened yeah. and I'm past all. It's not that at all.
Hang out with us a while. You'll see.
Yeah. it's not that at all. It's just,
you're not there.
This is just the trail. Mm-hmm. This is the way the wagon has went for mm-hmm. us, you know?
Yeah, it's what God's called us to. And I would say too, and I know you feel the same. If you are in a more traditional institutional church, whatever you want to call it, spoiler alert, Brennan Manning and then through Wes Seliger, the spoiler alert is, I think you're going to walk away from this being encouraged to be of the pioneer theology versus the settler theology. I would say as an institutional church, leaders can lead, lay people can follow in a pioneering theology direction, even if you're surrounded with four walls.
Right.
We're not saying this is the only way to do it. This is our specific calling, but it is a calling where we found adventure and found the call that God has for us.
Right.
And I think with that, you and I both echoes, like, I don't know, unless God was just absolutely all over it. I mean, you and I both have had traditional churches come to us and want us to put in like a resume or, you know, like go and our both initial responses was, well, one, we're where we feel like we need to be right now. We're content with that. Mm. And two, you and I both talked about that. It's like, I just don't see right now, you know, being able to go back to that. And so, but I think the biggest change for me, and I think this is a beautiful switch, at least for my mentality. And I will say, I do feel like this is something, whether you're in a traditional setting or very non-traditional like us, which if you want to get down to it, ours is probably more traditional as far as going back to how it started.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say this probably needs to be true. Not probably, it needs to be true for everyone. That the switch that's happened for me through this, now you may can listen to this and God flip a switch through the Holy Spirit and you don't need to go out on the trail, you know, in this particular way. But to me, church has got to switch from being an event and something we go to more of a personality of who we are.
Mm.
You know, not a building. Even the wording that, like, I still use it. I still say it, and I even catch myself of, like, when we talk about church at Southside, I'm real quick to try to point out, it's like, we're going to the church at Southside gathering today, like, mm-hmm. the family. But the term go-to church,
mm-hmm.
heard that my whole life. And it's not that it's necessarily, like, a bad thing or just, oh, theologically so wrong that God's going to judge you. It's just, it never was supposed to be something we went to.
Right.
It never was an event. In fact, I think that's been a big ploy of the enemy, is you set up this Super Bowl Sunday event of everybody gathers and, you know, we have this TED Talk and, you know, all this facility and all the stuff and the programs and discipleship training and Sunday school and small groups and all the stuff that you can mention. Again, I've got zero doubt that people have been brought into genuine relationship with God through the Son, through those events.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just that. Right. It is being the body of Christ, being a community. And I mean, I'm picturing, and I'm not going to give the rundown of, well, we've got this person, that person. Every traditional church, And we live in still, unfortunately, on the Sunday hour that most people gather to worship, a very segregated hour, which should be the least segregated hour of our week.
Mm-hmm.
Every traditional place that I've served has looked just like me, acted just like me. And boy, now, again, the demographics don't matter. It's just like we were talking election. Like you and I know, we've heard it. We've had people come up to us like in the same moment, one after another. If Harris doesn't get in office, we're going to be in trouble. If Trump gets in office, we're going to be in trouble. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? It's like yeah. the division of earthly, you know, things as far as, you know, an economic scale or a background or a life situation or whatever. Racial issues, all of that stuff, you know, it's like, it's what the church is really supposed to be.
Right.
No one, and it's not even a thing of the ones that come and volunteer their time to serve. It's not that they're looked as better than. No, it's a part of, you know, it's just everybody's a family.
Yeah.
That comes with family drama, family issues. Like mm-hmm. we're not perfect, if, you know, far from it, especially, you know, you and I think we would say we lead in that not being perfect. We're pretty open and honest when we share with our people of, you know, our shortcomings and things that are going on. But that's been the best switch to me, of all, is it's not somewhere we go. It's something, you know, that we are, that yeah. body of Christ.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because, you know, I read a book years ago, and I cannot remember the name of the book, but the guy gives a brief history of how the institutional church came to be where it is. Mm-hmm. And I'll probably screw a lot of it up, so I'm not going to get into all that, but he does touch on how, you know, the emperor, I guess he was an emperor, Constantine, you know, the expression of church we have now is a harken back to the Constantinian mm-hmm. model of church. He sort of set that up with the building, this elevated stage mm-hmm. with the pastor, and it was more of a spectator, you know, mm-hmm. the stained glass windows that told stories because people couldn't read.
Yeah.
And all this kind of stuff.
Frank Viola, maybe?
Frank Viola. Yeah.
I've read that one.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the book, but Google Frank Viola if you want more info.
But I think that's, you know, we human beings gravitate to things that are controlled
mm-hmm.
just in terms of, like, because it's safer, it's predictable. That's the nature that we have. I mean, if you read the Old Testament, the children of Israel in the desert, they mm-hmm. kept trying to gravitate back to what was safe, what mm-hmm. was controlled. They said, you know,
well, hell, even after the parting of the Red Sea, it's like when they're standing at the bank and the waters before them, it's like we'd have been better off
right
back there making bricks.
Yeah.
Then out here, you brought us out here to die.
Well, they say, man, back there, we sat around pots of meat cooking over a fire.
Yeah.
Here, we're out in the desert and we don't have any, you know.
Yeah.
And, but we gravitate towards those things. We gravitate mm-hmm. towards safety, to predictable. But the Spirit of God, to follow the Spirit of God, means that you step into what is a little bit dangerous, mm-hmm. what is unpredictable. And it's like we are empowered to do that
mm-hmm.
when we find our safety and our security in the person of Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the difference. And right. And again, it's like we're not suggesting that all of that needs to be dumped. Mm-hmm. This is not a throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of situation.
Right.
But this is sort of a, I think for me, this is always a sort of a reevaluation. Mm-hmm. Am I really following Jesus in this?
Yeah.
Am I really following the path that he's laying out, you know? But we will always gravitate back towards those things. And that's why we can't. I mean, what's the proverb that says there's always a way that seems right for a man.
Right.
Yeah. And so we all have that way. Well, this is the way we've done it. Yeah. That's the thing that we hear, and you know, we've always done it this way. It's like, Jesus disrupted all that.
Yeah.
He always did.
Even
you know?
Even the way he healed. You know, we're going through Matthew right now. It's like, at one time he speaks, at one time he says your faith, and at one time he like spits in the dirt and makes mud, and like, I mean, it's always even the way he enters into the situation, but. Two things on that real quick. One less serious, one a little more serious. I'll go with the less serious first. Do you think in history anyone ever did throw the baby out with the bathwater? Whoops.
I think that saying had to come from somewhere.
Like, I'm just picturing the tub and it's
where's
like,
the Wah! Baby? Where's the baby?
Oh, Jesus. I threw it out with the bathwater.
He's outside in the mud.
A little more, well, I guess that is a pretty serious situation, but I joke about it. But one of the things Frank said in that book, and I can't remember the name of the book.
Pagan Christianity.
There you go. That's
there
it
is.
That's it.
Yeah.
We're old folks. Give us time. It'll come back to us. Now, we could have quoted Back to the Future and been right on it, but
yeah. Well, and he actually rewrote it.
Yeah.
There's a revision with George Barna, I think it is, and that's the good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good, concise.
Yeah, I think that's called More Pagan Christianity.
More Pagan Christianity.
Part two. But no, one of the illustrations, and I've used this before and have given him credit, but the illustration of what we've taken the modern church into as well, if you take Paul's description of the body being, you know, made up of many parts, many members, and Jesus being the head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's obvious. You think about, you know, hands, feet, arms, legs, whatever. But what we've turned the modern church into is a singular pastor that's a tongue, a mouth,
mm-hmm.
and then a congregation full of ears that just sit there and listen,
right,
soak up the information and then leave.
Yeah.
And so much of the body, you know, is missed there. If there's, and you know me as good as anybody, I don't think I pride myself or brag on myself like ever really. In fact, I probably go the opposite extreme sometimes, a little too tough. You have to remind me the Office quote. What do you say when I'm too much on myself? Do you remember? Be nice.
Be nice to my friend Keith.
Yeah. So,
and if Daryl's listening,
yeah,
be nice to my friend Daryl.
That's right. Our apologies to Daryl Wilson. But I think one of the few things maybe I've gotten right along the way is when we too started from a church plant. It didn't necessarily close at that time, but it didn't, you know, it was one of those things. It was like we were feeling called towards it, and some people left, you know, mm-hmm. with us, and same thing, gathered around the house without a name, you know, what are we going to do? And God, you know, led to where we're at today.
Right.
But, you know, just thinking about, you know, thinking back to those times when we really started to form, like, okay, we're going to make an official church plant here, and it's going to be different, and it's going to be this. And we went so simple with the name. I remember, you know, stuff's being thrown around like Awakening and, you know, Passionate People, or I don't know, you know, just all this buzzword stuff. And, you know, we just, I don't even remember who it was like, you know, every time Paul talked to the church, it was like, hey, here's a letter to the church at Corinth. Here's a letter to the church at Philippi. And it was like, let's just be the church at Southside. And right. Then we wound up meeting in the north side of town. So that was great. But one of the things was like, people wanted that traditional, you know, pastor at the top of the pyramid, you know, make the decisions or whatever. And I fought against that to the thing. It's like, no, we're going to lead as a team. And if there's anybody that's a pastor, like, they're going to have one vote at the table. And, mm-hmm. Even with that, I've had, you know, people think, oh, you're, you know, getting your way or whatever. It's like, no, there's been plenty of times,
right,
you know, that we've done something opposite, and it's worked out well that way.
Yeah.
Like you know, there's been plenty of times I've been wrong. And so I would love to see that more in the traditional churches as well, where, you know, I hate to tell you, you know, if it's your pastor that's a man or woman, they do not have all the answers.
Right.
They're not a dictator. They're not the head of your church. That's Jesus, you know, Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all follow that. But yeah, the going to church versus being, and I'll go back to his illustration. So Wes Seliger, in Settler Theology, the church is the courthouse, and you think of the laws, and you think of the, he'll get into more what God is in that scenario and everything. But in Pioneer Theology, the church is the covered wagon. And I love that he says, you know, arrow, you know, holes, and it's bandaged with baling wire and all of this. What does that image give to you?
I'm going to have to take a quick break because I'm about to pee myself.
All right.
So if you want to play some more of the Brendan Manning,
yeah,
more of that while I go to the bathroom. I'll be right back.
See, we're not real high tech here. So if Jesse needs to do that, we'll take that break here and get towards some of the Brendan Manning.
Home, you will indeed be my disciples. Believing that the mayor is in the courthouse. In Pioneer Theology, faith is the spirit of adventure, the readiness to move out, to risk everything on the trail. Faith is obedience to the restless voice of the trail boss. In Settler Theology, sin is breaking one of the town ordinances. In Pioneer Theology, sin is wanting to turn back. In Settler Theology, salvation means living close to home, hanging around the courthouse. In Pioneer Theology, salvation is being more afraid of sterile life in town than death on the trail. Salvation is joy at the thought of another day to push into the unknown. It is trusting in the trail boss, following the scout, while living on the meat provided by the buffalo hunter. My friends, the settlers and the pioneers portray in colorful and popular language the people of the law and the people of the spirit.
And Jesse Crow is back. He's been back a second. He wasn't gone that long. But, hey, we promised you guys real, raw, and unedited.
Yes.
And I'm leaving that in there.
So, whenever I drink a cup of coffee, I've got about a 15-minute threshold before I have to go pee again.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Well, you made it. You made it a pretty good while there.
Yeah.
I'm impressed. So, back to church in settler theology is a courthouse with all the trappings there, and then the church is the covered wagon in pioneer theology. What does that bring?
Well, you know what I think about is, you remember on the Mountain of Transfiguration, that story where Jesus takes Peter and who was the other guy? Peter and somebody.
Oh, man.
He takes two of his disciples. Peter's one of them.
Yeah, Peter and John.
Peter and John.
Yeah.
Takes them up there, and then he meets with God and a couple other people,
yeah.
Prophets.
Yeah.
Moses. Yeah, yeah, Moses and somebody else. What does Peter say? He says, let's build a tent.
Mm.
Let's hang out here a while.
Yeah.
And it's like, I always think about that when I think about that illustration, because this is what I have learned about Jesus. Mm-hmm. He's always on the move.
Yeah.
I mean, ever since I started following God, like seriously, mm-hmm. He is always moving, you know? Yeah. And it's not like, I love what this quote in the book, he says, although they cherish land already explored, the pioneers never glorify the wagon's ruts. Mm. They love the past because it has brought them to the present. But they realize that to live in the past is to give up pioneering.
Mm.
So it's like this wagon versus the courthouse is, you know, again, we gravitate towards what's simple, what's easy, what's predictable, what's safe, right? Mm-hmm. We always gravitate towards that. I mean, that's really a human instinct, like a self-protection thing. And it's really coded in our DNA. It's not necessarily bad.
Yeah.
But again, man, it's like to follow Jesus, to accept that journey, to accept that path means that you have to accept that if you try and stay put, if you try and stop and like Peter, well, let's build a tent. Let's just stay here, you know? You're going to be frustrated,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're always going to be disappointed. And I look back and I have fond memories of certain times in my life in church life. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first really started getting into my faith and understanding God and spending time with God on my own, I can remember those times as a young kid, 14, 15 years old. And those are precious times
yeah.
to me. You know, yeah. I can remember, you know, one particular season of life. Reggie Nichols was part of this. You know, he was a youth leader at my church, and Rodney Cornegie was my youth pastor, and we used to all hang out together and we just would go to movies together, and we would read the Bible together, and we'd listen to music. And Rodney always had, you know, back then it was CDs. They didn't mm-hmm. have, you know, MP3 and, yes. and streaming.
For you young folks, that is a compact disc.
It is a compact disc.
Yeah.
Rodney always had the newest and best Christian music, you know, and he had an old gold Thunderbird
yeah.
and we would pile in that car and go watch a movie and go eat dinner after church or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it was beautiful and good. And I remember when that time changed, it was sadness, mm-hmm. you know, but I learned from that. It gave me something that I carry with me now. It awakened me to the need for community, to experience God with my friends, mm-hmm. to be on mission,
yeah.
to taste the goodness of the really, I didn't know it then, but almost a pioneering spirit mm-hmm. back then.
Yeah.
Even though it was based in the courthouse style church, you know.
Right.
But man, God has been on the move ever since that period of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm starting to just expect it. you know? And, but it's a lot easier to walk through seasons when you have friends around you who understand that as well. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a small group of us, me, you, Steven, Roger, some other guys that I haven't named, and our wives and, mm-hmm. and other folks that kind of understand that and kind of expect it too. Yeah. So it makes leaving a season a little better mm-hmm. because you're moving together.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
by the way, the Mount of Transfiguration, Peter, James, and John. And, you know, they were considered the inner circle of Jesus.
Right.
I heard somebody one day is like, you know, the other disciples were sick. Oh, Pete, James, and John, here they go again. Jesus taking off the three, you know. But anyway. Well, I look forward to the rest of this and going through. And as we're getting ready to wrap up, I would just say this. If you, again, find yourself in that traditional, you know, church setting, nothing wrong with that. But I would encourage you to pray about what it looks like to, instead of having that settler mindset where you just stake out a place on your pew or a chair mm-hmm. in the sanctuary or whatever, and that's it. All you're doing is going to listen. What would it look like to bring a pioneering spirit, theology, if you will, into that environment? Because I promise you, wherever your building is that you go to gather, again, you don't go to church. You mm-hmm. are the church. You're right. Part of the church if you are a follower of Christ. But as you go to that gathering, pay attention to your surroundings and places around you. And I'm not talking about, you know, if going to a door, knocking on and handing a flyer. You know, I mean, that to me is a very safe, you know.
Right.
But in your community, how can you live out in a pioneering way outside of the box? And I'll just put it this way, and I won't name the church, but I pass by it every day, and there's a sign out, and I get their intentions, and I'm sure it's the best heart, you know, of everything. Their sign, and fortunately, it's not a, you know, CH blank blank CH, what is missing? I saw somebody flub that one not too long ago. They spelled out the word you, YOUARE. It's like, no, that's not, you missed it anyway. But if that's your church, my apologies.
What's that? Chorich?
Yeah, something like that. But the one that I do see is like, you are welcome, period. And it says, come inside. And I get what they're saying. Like, it is, you know, yeah, you'll be welcomed in here. But it's like, I just, there's part of me, maybe it's that pioneering spirit that's like, why don't you go outside?
Right.
You know, I mean, I just can't even imagine being a guest. It's been so long since I've done that. But being a guest for the first time and walking up to a building where you know nobody, mm-hmm. maybe. You know, maybe somebody's invited you. But if it's a place you have no connection, say you've moved from another part of the country or whatever, going into a building and just maybe feeling like the condemnation, the who, you know, the mm-hmm. the eyes of who you are, especially if you look a little different, you know, maybe a different background, whatever. It's just like, no, man, go outside, yeah. you know, go get them, and then let them know that they're a part. But
I'd also say too that, this idea of getting outside of, you know, the institutional idea of church, not necessarily the actual thing, because we're not suggesting anybody go leave their church or mm-hmm. nothing yet. But it will always start within your own soul.
Mm-hmm.
It will always start within your heart. And it's like John Eldridge said recently on a podcast, or it's been about a year ago, he said, The heart of people is vast.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a landscape.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where the pioneering starts.
Mm-hmm.
It starts within your own life, and it will flow outside of your life as well. And where that goes, once it gets from the heart to the outer world, is really up to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that may mean you stay where you're at.
Yeah.
And do something disruptive there in a I've godly
had
disruptive.
That conversation lately with somebody. Right. Kind of, it's like, man, struggling. I mean, and it's like, you may be the one to
well, help. You may start a small group of, or a small discipleship thing with some people. Mm-hmm. That talks about some of this stuff and starts to gear people and steer people towards a the wildness of God, mm-hmm. you know, that happens within that that context. So,
can I close with something super serious?
Yes,
I want to close with Toby from The Office.
Okay,
and I'm not going to tell you to go reach out to people that have sat in a cafeteria somewhere and somebody just slowly slides their tray off the table. One of the best scenes. But there is a serious thing. I always think of Toby from The Office when I think about this topic. And I know that sounds weird, but Jim and Pam's baby is being christened. You remember that episode?
Yes. They're at,
you know, like Catholic, you know, type church. And Toby is going to the christening. And it shows him multiple times walking to the steps of the church. And he's like going in the building and he's like, nope, can't do it. He backs away. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
So it's very telling. He goes back the last time and he hits the top step. He's never gone in. Like the whole, you know, episode.
Why does he not want to go in?
He's his relationship with God. Like he gets to the end and he's out there by himself, almost as a prayer, like talking out loud. He says, why are you so mad at me? Like to God.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm dead serious. And it is, I love The Office. It is pure comedy, but that is a telling. You have, God forbid, but you do have Toby's, you know, in your life. You know, if we're taking the character, I kid about having a difficult person. But that just will not go to a building. They just won't. They're not going to go on their own, you know, discipleship or reaching out, walking with somebody. It is long and oftentimes nasty work.
Mm.
You know, just the, hey, come on, go to church with me. You know, doesn't always work. Sometimes it does. Invite. Like, I'm not saying don't do that.
Right.
But I just picture him. He just can't cross that threshold because of who knows what.
Right.
And so, you know, you don't know that the person you're inviting hasn't had a traumatic experience. I mean, we know that people are involved in church, and anytime people's involved anywhere, there's going to be, you know, trauma and wounds and all kind of things. And so just say, what kind of pioneering theology can you bring into wherever you're at in your life right now? That brings people to, first off, a walk with God, but then a closer walk with God. And so that's what we hope this series will be about. So Western theology, look forward to getting more into it next episode. So thank you guys for joining us, and we'll see you next time. And hey, if you haven't heard, go download that Buffalo song by Jesse Crow, The Unrest, right?
There you go.
And if you say, man, I wonder what that Buffalo song sounds like, well, here's a little bit of the instrumental part of it, but the other's much better. So go check it out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.